Good evening, this is Mae Brussel. The title of this broadcast is World Watchers. It's a one-hour analysis of news. I always recommend that you tape record these if you can. And many, many more of you are sending self-addressed stamped envelopes for bibliography sheets that are available with the sources of information of the broadcast. It's broadcast 758, 1986. The last 2 weeks I've been talking about the agent provocateur possibility of the Chernobyl accident being set off by people inside the Soviet Union that wanted to discredit Mr. Gorbachev, break down his popularity, make the arms talks over because you couldn't trust him if this event happened, to synchronize it with Helmut Kohl's speech to the Sudeten, the Czechoslovakians. He already had a captured audience of 70,000 right after the accident that want to invade the Soviet Union and at World War III anyway, and the use of the Chernobyl accident along with the Libyan affair and terrorism, in quotes, by Ronald Reagan at the summit, and many other reasons that this was synchronized for that particular event. And I cited Radio Moscow saying that there was a leakage in Germany starting May the 4th, a very serious leakage of radiation, and Helmut Kohl continued for a month giving speeches saying the Soviet Union should give him $90 million for the food loss, and not acknowledging in the United States, except for some very small articles, that this terrible thing happened in Germany, and that a hunk of the radiation that would later be causing the cancer that they could blame on the Russians was happening from Germany. There were several articles about this, very small ones, that were in the newspaper, and 70,000 people demonstrated in Germany against the leakage of their nuclear plant, and I would venture to say that hardly anyone in the United States knew this was taking place. The San Jose Mercury had a small item, June the 4th, Germans shut down leaky nuclear plant. This is from Dusseldorf, Germany, the reactor that was leaking radiation last month. See, that was exactly 30 days before they admitted it was leaking. They said they're shutting it down pending completion of an investigation. The Hamm-Ewentrop reactor had been switched off Friday, that's about June the 1st, for what utility companies officially described as routine maintenance. It was scheduled to come back online Tuesday night, but the North Rhine-Westphalia state government decided to keep the plant idle while a special state commission finishes their inquiry into the leak. The information for this came from a World Watcher who listens to the program on KFJC and told me about the situation in Germany and what he was hearing from shortwave radio that we weren't getting in this country. The People's Daily World, June the 4th, had a small article. Nuke accident is covered up, and this is about West Germany and Hamm, the North Rhine-Westphalia area on May the 4th, that there was radioactive gas leak that is just becoming known now, that the officials at first said it was too negligible to make public, but I doubt if you have a demonstration of 70,000 people for something very small. And then the article goes on to say that the company representatives were saying that radioactivity was due to the Chernobyl nuclear power plant in the Soviet Union, and the authorities at the accident said it was caused by a malfunctioning filter, that it had been going on for quite a while, which was true, and that it did in fact take place, so it's hard to separate the radiation from the two, what responsibility the Soviet Union has for what happened in Germany and how much is caused by the German plant itself. Another article, San Francisco Chronicle, June the 11th, this past week, nuclear mystery, Finland records a surge in radiation. And out of Helsinki, they were monitoring what was a mysterious 10-second peak of atmospheric radiation that was higher than Chernobyl. Finland still can't determine where the Monday night radiation came from. It could be a nuclear test. It could be a leak in nuclear power plant or a fault in the meter. Swedish television said yesterday evening there was speculation the radiation could have come from a sudden but controlled emission from the nuclear power complex in the Soviet Union. Now, what if Germany wanted to have, and if it was possible, to have a controlled emission of radiation to blame your enemy? And Helmut Kohl certainly was making Russia their enemy because of this accident. And there was no explanation, maybe there will be in the weeks to come, on the increase of radiation, but the suggestion that there could be controlled leaks that were let out in the air. And finally, just on that subject, the San Jose Mercury had a long article May the 7th, 1 week after the accident. Local Soviet officials cited for delay in reporting accident. And many of you might have seen that the evacuation process and the area around the plant for 36 hours was never described as serious, and the information that the officials received was obtained from, it was picked up in Sweden, and then they checked on it and found out there were, in fact, these leaks and this problem. And is it possible to not tell the powers that be that contact Mr. Gorbachev what is happening and let the leakage take place until another country picks it up, and Radio Free Europe and Radio Free America, like I said last week and the week before, then they say, see, we're telling you the things your government doesn't tell you, but did the high-up government know it right away? There was that delay in reporting. One of the persons involved with it disappeared. I haven't seen any more about him. Several were fired, and Germany had their own problems with the radiation leak. Incidentally, when Mr. Kurt Waldheim was elected the president of Austria, one of the first countries to praise his election and be pleased with it and not have the socialists win came from the Soviet Union. So who in the Soviet Union would prefer a former Nazi cited as a war criminal with enough evidence to prosecute him? Who in the Soviet Union is jubilant that Mr. Waldheim is the president of Austria? Now, there have been suggestions that the Soviet Union, the officials, knew about his Nazi past when he was at the UN and could blackmail him while at the UN to make decisions favorable to the Soviet Union, or at least not anti-Russian, and keep the goods on him to blackmail him because of evidence of his past. But the same people who would praise Mr. Marcos for winning the election in the Philippines, or praise Mr. Waldheim, which is even 10 times worse, for being the president in Austria, could have their counterparts in science scientists who would allow a nuclear plant to leak to discredit Mr. Gorbachev. If it is socialists and communists you don't want, what do these people want? And is this one more sign of the mindset of the Soviet Union, the powers that could begin as young people in the Ukraine, as Hitler Youth worked their way up and now are taking these positions that are not really very easy to understand? There was an article in the Wall Street Journal this week, a small one. There'll be more of this because this affects Ronald Reagan and that Teflon that never seems to dent. June the 11th, this is what the article said, the White House managed a private aid network that provided military assistance to Nicaraguan rebels during last year's congressional aid ban when they weren't to send the weapons. The sources said the White House used outside intermediaries who helped the anti-Sandinista rebels with arms purchases, fundraising, and training. Well, if the White House was doing that, that again would be John Singlaub, who was in fact in the White House in this time period and documented. He then visited the National Security Council. He's the head of World Anti-Communist League with Nazis and fascists that want, again, to overturn the what was a victory in World War II against fascism and put these same people back in government. And he represents the funding of the Vatican and the Roman Empire with the Knights of Malta. And he's on the board of Western Goals with the likes of Edward Teller and Larry McDonald and Roy Cohn and people high up in the military and John Reese. This will develop, but this is a very important story because the White House can do anything and doesn't seem to get a slap on the wrist. Now, the investigation of Michael Deaver as a lobbyist is a very complex one. He represents so many elements such as Saudi Arabia, South Korea. He represents the CBS. He's a lobbyist for them. He represents the Puerto Rican government and tries to get tax provisions favorable to Puerto Rico, which is just a little less money in the pockets of the United States federal government that is so broke. He represents, as did William Casey, our director of the CIA, represented the Marcos to get overseas tax benefits and loopholes to not pay taxes in New York City on property they own. Do you realize that the White House has their appointed people helping keep money out of this country while they make their profits? And Deaver made from nothing, $70,000 a year, as working for the president in that office of the head of the White House, chief of staff, Within 1 year, he was offered $17 million for his public relations firm. Now, the investigator, the purpose of the special investigator is to be objective, to see, because the Justice Department and Edwin Meese are so close to the president, to see what Michael Deaver did wrong and possibly more than slap him on the wrist, possibly a prosecution could exist. Of course, these special prosecutors don't do that because they're part of the same team. The Washington Post has an article about the special prosecutor that, in quotes, will investigate Michael Deaver. This is May 30th, 1986. His name is Whitney North Seymour, Jr. In 1971, Whitney Seymour, Jr. was representing Richard Nixon to prosecute Daniel Ellsberg for the Pentagon Papers. Now, he can't be a neutral. He worked for Richard Nixon, which is identical to working for Ronald Reagan. Fred Fielding from the White House was a leftover continuity from the Nixon administration, George Shultz in the Nixon administration, William Casey. Everyone around this president is a continuity of the past convoluted crimes, and he was prosecuting Ellsberg. They also cite the example that he won an indictment of John Mitchell and Maurice Stans, former Commerce Secretary, on charges of receiving $250,000 to the Nixon Reelection Committee from fugitive financier Robert Vesco. Then, it adds, they were acquitted. The key to these cases, as in Nazi Germany, as it worked its way up into fascism, was to get the guilty people off in the courts and get the innocent locked up or as patsies, and the manipulation of the courts works just this way. The special prosecutor for Watergate was Leon Jaworski, who worked with the Anderson Foundation of the CIA. He later was a prosecutor investigating the Korea Gate, and the links of these people to the very persons that should be locked up or investigated further is so thick that they're guaranteed to get off because there's a weak prosecution. And, of course, you can't visualize this background of Mr. Seymour Jr. Ever trying to get Mr. Deaver cornered for having done anything wrong. The article said Seymour's late father, Whitney North Seymour Sr., a former American Bar Association president, was consulted by the Justice Department in 1973 when they were thinking of a special prosecutor for Watergate. And the prosecutor was Leon Jaworski of the Central Intelligence Agency. The people involved with Watergate were from the Central Intelligence Agency. They all became famous. They got rich. They wrote books. Every one of these Watergate people are prominent, G. Gordon Liddy and Robert Haldeman and John Ehrlichman. None of them suffer the way that they should. John Segretti is practicing law. Donald Segretti, rather. And each one of them, if you cite them, was never damaged. Some are quiet, like John Mitchell, but they never were locked up for the crimes that they committed. So much for the special prosecutor of Deaver. Now, there's another article, several this week. Fred Fielding won a change of law in order to let Deaver lobby. And this is even more sinister because as of December the 6th, it can't be more sinister. Everything about this whole scene in the news is bad. But December the 6th, 1982, 1 year after Ronald Reagan was president, a letter was sent to David R. Scott, acting director of the Office of Government Ethics. Mr. Fred Fielding, the hangover of John Mitchell and Robert Vesco and William Casey, partners with them, Fielding asked that the 9 offices of the Executive Office of President be separated from the 1978 Ethics in Government Act. And that came into power because of Watergate. And he says, keep the White House and the 9 offices separate. Now, Fred Fielding was a part of the Mitchell-Casey-Vesco operation. He was the person who was pushing Raymond Donovan to be Secretary of Labor. Donovan has role in, he's still up. His trial hasn't even started for his role in connections with organized crime. And, of course, he hired known murderers, worked with murderers, and has been with the mafia for goodness knows all the way back to his career in New Jersey, I suppose. And Fielding is part of that. So it certainly was the intention that Michael Deaver would be rewarded when he wanted to get out of the White House, when he got tired of making his $70,000 a year and said he was too poor. He was guaranteed $17 million being out 1 year. And the last official act he did as chief of staff was to get the President of the United States to put a wreath on the graves of the Waffen-SS at Bitburg, people from the World War II, the Nazis, the ilk of the Waldheims, and so forth, who were buried in the cemetery, and the president said they were such young boys, they didn't know what they were doing. So Deaver is working with Fred Fielding, and then after Deaver got out, he's hired Fred Fielding to be in his public relations office after Fielding changed the law in 1982 that made it possible for him to build up the office when he got out. I really can't think of anything more raunchy or crazy than what Reagan is doing. You know, from the White House giving the military aid to the Contras, when Congress says, no, it can't be for this and that, they're shooting people down, cutting throats, torturing, and so forth, no military, humanitarian. So the President of the United States reaches into his little big CIA Defense Department pocket and gives them what they want. Now, speaking of Fielding and Nixon and Reagan and Watergate, this is the 14th anniversary since Watergate, and at the time of Watergate, I wrote my first published article, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? Now, the Nation magazine had an article a friend sent to me, a World Watcher, called Watergate, the Greek Connections. I want you to know this was May 31st, 1986. If you don't have it, the libraries have it. Get a copy of it. I want you to know that the next week there was an article about Mr. Rudolph, the Nazi, that came over with Project Paperclip, and I got about 17 telephone calls about Rudolph in Nation magazine, and not one person or regular listener made any connections to the Watergate story and to the article I wrote about the subject that's in Nation magazine this past, the issue of May 31st. It's written by Christopher Hitchens, and he suggests that after 14 years of Watergate, nobody still has the question, the cardinal question, what were they doing there? Why were they there? And he summarizes that the footprints lead to a man named Tom Pappas. Pappas was described in Anthony Lucas's book, The Nightmare, an excellent book, working with John Mitchell and John Dean and John Mitchell and being in the apartment of Martha Mitchell. And I wrote that she was kidnapped and injected because she was witness to these dirty things that were happening. And this very interesting article goes into the relationship of Tom Pappas to the administration of Richard Nixon, that he was the man who helped select the vice president, Spiro Agnew, for Richard Nixon. Now, this is coming out in May 31st, 1986. He said the major financial backer for the administration was this Tom Pappas because of Spiro Agnew. Agnew was still governor of Maryland, but Pappas took a prime role in selecting Agnew as president's running mate. They both were from Greece, and Pappas worked with the Greek military junta. And between 1972, that year, the re-election of the president, early before Watergate, up through the election of the president, November 72, he went back and forth to Greece, raising money for the re-election of the president because he had taken Agnew as his vice president. And Tom Pappas admitted that he worked for the Central Intelligence Agency. He was co-chairman of the Finance Committee to re-elect the president. James McCord worked for him because he was hired as chief of security for that committee, and Pappas was the co-chairman of the committee. And this article, and I'm not going to do the whole story of the Nation now, is about the money that was put in by Tom Pappas and the Greek military junta and his close relationship to Martha and John Mitchell, and they even referred to him in the White House tapes when they needed money to quiet people or bail them out. They referred to the Greek, and that was the Greek. And the Nation also cites a Greek businessman, a friend of Tom Pappas, who, because of a contribution of Pappas, got the award for the fueling contract for the 6th Fleet in the entire Mediterranean, the area where we're having so much action and so many ships at the present time. Now, on the anniversary of Watergate, I just want to cite to you what I wrote within 3 weeks after the rest of the Watergate. I had it at the L.A. Press Club in August of 72. I had it on my program. In those days, it was called Dialogue Conspiracy. The title was changed to World Watchers later. Many of you have this article. Some have it and forget that what I said that was in there. And I want to just give a few references of what I wrote 12 years ago. And in a few more weeks, I'll get back to the rest of the Nation article. But in the meantime, you can copy it at your library. I wrote that 1972 was an important year in American history because provisions had been made to overthrow this government. that Roy Ash was a conduit through Litton Industries for trying to write a new constitution that would get away with every cabinet position except the Defense Department and the Treasury. I wrote that John Mitchell, one of the dirtiest, meanest men in political history, had to have his wife removed in silence totally discredited because things she saw in their apartment, and one of them was James McCord, and the other, of course, was Tom Pappas. And then I wrote about Andreas Papandreou, who was kicked out of Greece, and he had a good chance to win the elections, but the CIA put the coup d'etat in there, put the government, the military dictatorship in, the first Nazi government in Western Europe since World War II. I wrote the same CIA that funnels the cancellation of elections in Greece, and we did that, offered Richard Nixon the money he needed for his 1968 election if he took the political unknown Spiro Agnew as vice president. Money to manage an election campaign is difficult to separate when you mix CIA funds with Republican money. Robert Mullen, chairman of Mullen & Company, and that's a fellow that died just about a month or two ago, I cited, shared his office with E. Howard Hunt, with Robert Bennett, and Douglas Caddy, all CIA, possibly CIA agents, and they later were confirmed to be. Robert Bennett, through his office, raised $10 million in secret funds for John Mitchell. In 1968, Nixon was offered, through CIA conduit Tom Pappas and other sources, the funding he needed for his presidential election if he took Agnew as vice president. Robert Mullen played a large role in the campaign of the Nixon-Agnew the presidency. Did the money 4 years ago, I asked in 1972, going back to 68, come from the same secret funds, possibly CIA money, to Nixon for his last election? And Mr. Pappas admits, and it's in this article, his admission, with working for the CIA anytime they wanted. This continued and wrote, these questions are important to ask. The mixture of the party money, whether it's Democrat or Republican, mixed with the Central Intelligence Agency. These questions are important to ask now. Douglas Caddy, a CIA attorney for the Watergate Five, was co-founder of the extreme right-wing Republican group called Young Americans for Freedom. That was with William Buckley. And Ronald Reagan was put on the board of Young Americans for Freedom with Charles Willoughby. Young Americans for Freedom was infiltrated in the fall of 1962 at the home of Robert Morris in Dallas, Texas. A group of Nazi American military experts intended to help certain forces by whatever means necessary to secure the White House by 1970 for the conservatives. A large number of that group supported Agnew for president that year. And also, they not only want Agnew for president, but when Ronald Reagan was elected in 1980 and was inaugurated in 1981, they said, this is what we have always worked for. I wrote, if security agents allow members of the Young Americans for Freedom to be close to Richard Nixon through important contacts in the White House, Agnew would not have to be elected. He would be the next president. Because of the assassination teams and the capability of these people to kill, Agnew just had to be the vice president, and the very people that were used to murder John Kennedy would get Nixon out at that time. And I wrote, can CIA funds promised for election campaigns force Agnew on the Republican ticket? Of course they did. Can CIA funds channeled from Washington to Chile, and this is the re-election at the time that Henry Kissinger was overthrowing Chile and putting Pinochet in, and the money went from Chile to Mexico and Miami, ended up in the pockets of the men at the Watergate Hotel. Persons associated with right-wing factions of the Republican Party who think Nixon is a pinko because he went to Russia and China or didn't invade Cuba, can they be financed through our CIA to create martial law and kill Nixon? How many of the people connected with the secret funding of the Nixon team are associated with the reactionary Republicans? Is the same CIA that offered Greek colonels assistance in their coup d'etat, working with a larger organization to create martial law, having selected Spiro Agnew as their man? The significance of the Watergate affair is that everyone essential for a political coup d'etat in the United States was assembled at the time of their arrest. And then I went into Squad 19 and the LAPD relationship to the White House, and some more about Tom Pappas and the plans to take this country and get rid of Richard Nixon either at the convention in Miami or as soon as he was in office. And remember that Ronald Reagan was shot in March. He was inaugurated in January, happened to live through this affair, but was shot in March. And the man then who would become president of the United States was former director of the Central Intelligence Agency, who played a major role with the Chilean dictatorship, with Navy intelligence, and all angles of the intelligence, George Bush. And this pattern of selecting your vice president and having the other man in hand has only been broken and not been successful since Dallas, because certain people have stopped it and nipped it in the bud. And there is a belief that James McCord put the tape purposely on the door of the basement of the Watergate Hotel to stop these activities. He worked for Tom Pappas, and he worked with the Greek military junta that was going back and forth between Greece and the committee to re-elect the president. And so now, 14 years later, there is a long article that I say I'll update more sections of it for you. I just want to cover a broader amount of material this evening and then get back to some other articles, but want you to see the Nation article on Tom Pappas and Richard Nixon. I'll take a 1-minute break and then get back with you to some more very important stories.